Good morning, honorable members. Honorable members, we are ready to start. My greetings and welcome to all of you. Honorable Deputy Minister, I don't see the Deputy Minister here already. The Honorable Minister and the National Commissioner are in Turkey, so they have sent apologies. I also have apologies from Honorable Khunova. Honorable members, we say a prayer today for our colleague Sheikh Imam. He was involved in quite a bad accident. So as he was out of his car, another car bumped him as he was on the side of the road. So he's quite badly injured. And as you know, Honorable Sheikh Imam, who is so full of energy, he wanted to log in and attend the meeting virtually. I seriously reprimanded him and asked him to stay at home and not to connect virtually, but to also focus on his health and getting better. I also want to issue a very stern warning to Colonel Steyn. Colonel Steyn has contracted the COVID virus.
Recording in progress.
I've asked that Colonel Steyn also not log in and that he doesn't do any presentations. Could that message please go to Colonel Steyn? He still wants to work. He must take a break and rest, please. That's a stern warning. It's not a request. The commissioner is not here. Welcome to our legal services. Who has joined us. We also have our Executive Director of CIRA, Mr. Chauke. Welcome, Mr. Chauke, to you and your team. I don't know if you were here when I announced that you will do your presentation first on the BRRR report, and then we will ensure that we first do the BRRR report, and then we will do the legislation. Dr. Mafome, who is the chair of the CIRA board, is also here. Welcome, Dr. Mafome. We appreciate the work that has been done by CIRA. And we know that with another clean audit, you have done particularly well. We'd like to congratulate CIRA for and commend the board and the CEO for the sterling work that they do and continue to do. And we'd like to congratulate CIRA on a sustained clean audit. It gives us pride. And please, if I give you compliments, it's not that we're necessarily saying that you don't need to try harder and that the work is not over, but that we need sustained clean audits. Mr. Chauke, thank you very much to you and your team. You'll be the first to present after we've done all our housekeeping. I still do not see the Deputy Minister. Is the Deputy Minister here? Mr. Chauke, I'm not going to take hands now. I see you've raised your hand. I'm not going to take hands now. I'm going to allow you to do your presentation. Could I first have the agenda and the adoption of the agenda? If this is the agenda, could I have all the other apologies first? Could we have the apologies, Babawa? I know Dr. Groenewald, Sheikh Imam. And then Honorable Molekwa has also requested that she leaves early so that she could take the bus and join the house. I see the hands of Honorable Whitfield and Honorable Meshu. Honorable Whitfield?
Chair, I need to leave at 11:30, please, with your permission.
Yeah. Honorable Whitfield, I think that is sort of the cutoff time for most members. So I hope to finish by 11:30. Honorable Meshu.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm attending International Relations at 10, so I'm going to log off at 9:45.
Agreed, Honorable Meshu. Last week you sent your one of the members of your political party. Thank you very much for doing that. We really appreciate your participation, Honorable Meshu, and I'd like to personally thank you for that. Now that we can switch your hands, Babawa, could you do the other apologies, please? Before I take the CIRA presentation, I'll first do the minutes. We have to adopt the minutes.
Good morning, Chair. I didn't get any further apologies.
So it's Groenewald and then
Sheikh Imam, yes, Chair, and the Minister.
And the Minister and the National Commissioner.
Yes, Chair.
The Deputy Minister is here now, so before we start the CIRA presentation, we'll get the Deputy Minister. Good morning, Deputy Minister, and welcome.
Morning, Chair, and morning to the leadership. My apologies. There was a problem of connectivity where I am. Thanks.
We understand that, but thank you for joining us. We're going to adopt the minutes now of the 10th of November, and then after that, we'll adopt the minutes of the 17th of November. Could I have the minutes of the 10th of November, please? sorry, my apologies. Honourable members, Honourable Faku has been elected to the Deputy Mayor of Buffalo City Municipality. So we congratulate her. I think we must send a congratulatory letter on behalf of the Portfolio Committee. Could we also send a get well email to Honourable Sheikh Imam? I'm sure we can all say that on behalf of the committee, we wish him well. Could we also send a get well message to Colonel Stein? He's been a rock in this committee. He's always assisting and doing presentations. And when the committee needs to liaise with the National Commissioner's Office, he is always absolutely professional in his responses, and he responds promptly. I have page one. Could we go down to the minutes? Scroll down, please. Honourable members, you've seen the minutes. Do you have any corrections that you'd like to make? Additions? Corrections? Could I have comments?
Chairperson.
Honourable Whoop.
Yeah, I see in the attendant register.
Can we go back to the attendance register?
I see my name is not recorded.
I'm just telling them they've forgotten Honorable Siave. Oh, please, man. That's a whoop. How can you do that? There were also sections where the whoop chaired. So how can you forget the whoop, please?
But also, again, I don't see the names of the minister and the deputy minister. I might have missed it, but I don't see their names in those meetings.
I do not see the names of the minister and the deputy minister. Doc, where's the names of the minister and the deputy minister?
She will add it if it's not there. I said we'll add it if it's not there, Chair.
Yes, it's
there. Okay, thanks.
Could you please add the names of the minister and the deputy minister? Do I have more hands? Honourable Whitfield, is your hand up again, or is it an old hand?
Sorry, Chair, it's a young hand, but it's older today.
No, you stay young, Honourable Whitfield, and you have a very handsome son. Honourable Meshu, is that a new hand?
Yes, Chairperson, I did attend the meeting, even though I left early for International Relations Committee.
Oh, please, Honourable Meshu's name is also not there. Could we correct that, please? Honourable members, Any other comments or additions that you'd like to make? If not, could we have a proposal for the adoption of the minutes?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Mega, I move for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection with correction.
With the corrections, Honorable Molekwa proposes adoption. Do I have a seconder?
Peacock second, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Peacock seconds. Were those corrections, can we correct the names of the minister and the deputy minister? Could I have the next set of minutes, please? Could you please ensure that you add there that we have Honorable Seabe there as the acting chair. Any other names? Do we have
Chairperson, I see my name is not there at the attendance register.
Oh, please, Babawa and Dr. Kinis, I don't see Honorable Moss there.
We will add it. We must just apologize because these minutes were not taken by our committee secretary. Remember, there were two standing secretaries.
Yes.
So I think they just didn't know all the members. So apologies for that. Yes. Thank you very much.
Apologies, honorable members. Babawa was on study leave, but we do check the minutes. So I think when we check the minutes, we should have noted that. Today's minutes, could we also note that Honorable Faku is no longer a member of the committee and that she has now being nominated and elected as the deputy mayor. Do I have any comments or corrections? Honorable Siabe, as the acting chairperson, could you assist us with this minutes, please? Honorable Siabe, do you have any corrections to this minute?
Thank you, Chair. Yes.
We can take
with
your
this
correction.
One, huh? No, I think I'm fine.
You
I'm
have
fine,
no
Chair.
Additions? No additions?
No. I've looked at the resolutions also. I think they are fine.
Thank you very much. Do I have any other comments or corrections? General Tablanche, you're very quiet. Do you have any corrections?
I'm here, Chairperson, but I'm fine at the moment. Thank you.
Oh, General, why are you so quiet today? But you're happy, General Tablanche?
I am the chairperson, and silence is sometimes, you know, a strategy.
Oh, no, it's golden, not a strategy. Silence is golden. You know, when you're happy, then I'm happy.
Thank you, Chairperson.
You and Honorable Whitfield, when you're silent, then I know I can continue. Honorable members, do we have, and Honorable Shembeni, you're also very quiet. Honorable Shembeni, are you happy?
I'm still all right, so you can get on.
Okay. Honorable Shembeni, we received the email with your names. Dr. Kinis, can you just ensure that Honorable Shembeni's questions have been responded to?
Well, Duce, we've already
Dr.
forwarded
Kinis, have they responded?
No, they have not responded.
Yes,
yet, so
but can you just monitor that they do respond?
Well, Duce.
All right. Honorable members, do I have a proposal for adoption? Yeah. Oh, I see that. Do I have a proposal for adoption?
Is it there? Is it signed?
Can you just mute your mic, please?
The civilian
secretariat Ayanda X, please mute your mic.
Yeah.
Oh, Ayanda, your
Quite
as well. Can someone tell, please mute the mic? Honorable Siyabo.
No, I'll just respond to that. I just want to hear from the defendant
who was born.
I don't think it's. I'm not sure.
Can you tell someone to please mute the mic? Can someone
Chair, the host can mute the chair. The host can mute the Babawa can mute
the. Can the host please
mute? Oh, sorry.
Yes, we heard your sorry. We heard your apology. Don't worry. It happens to all of us. Today is a very rough day for all of us, I know. I'm still looking for someone to adopt the minutes. Do I have someone who's going to adopt the minutes? Honorable Moss proposes adoption. Do I have a seconder?
Honorable Molekwa seconded.
Honorable Molekwa seconded. Honorable Whoop, please mute your mic. Honorable Siabe, thank you very much. That takes us to the end of the minutes. Dr. Kinis Kuchichas, there's a number of reports which has to come back to the House, which the House Chair, the Chair of Chairs, has noted to me in an email. Could we put that on the agenda as well? And then remember, I've requested that last week Friday that we have the annual crime stats. We cannot just have quarterly crime stats. The committee is supposed to receive the annual crime stats as they collate the crime stats of the different quarters. I intend doing that on the 8th of December. Do you agree to that, honorable members, that we have the annual crime stats?
Agree to that, Chair.
Thank you very much. And this time they must send us the presentation because it's not new crime stats. So they must send us a presentation so that we could do our analysis of the crime stats. Dr. Kinis, could you please alert Deputy Minister that they should send us the annual crime stats and that this should be sent well in advance. Dr. Kinis, you have a list of all those reports that's still outstanding?
Chair, I'll find those three reports and it'll come back to you. But mostly it's the Human Rights Commission reports with the institution supporting democracy. One goes back to 2019, and then we were supposed to adopt those reports on the 17th or the 10th of March. What's happened, Chair, is it was on the agenda, SAPS did their presentation, but there wasn't time. We went back between myself and Babalwa. There wasn't time in the committee. We just received the presentation, but there was no discussion. And that's the reason why there was no report that we could present, Chair. Thanks.
Dr. Kinis, could we correct that in our next meeting, please? The Chair of Chairs picked it up, and my apologies to the members that I have not completed that matter. It will be brought to the meeting in the next portfolio committee meeting. Do we still have, there's still one more matter. On the 3rd of December, we have been invited to the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education to address the matter of violence at institutions of higher education. Could we have an agreement, members, that will attend a joint sitting with the Portfolio Committee of Higher Education? Do you agree to that, honorable members?
Yes, Chairperson. I agree,
Chair.
Thank you. Honorable members, please, I'm not bulldozing you. If you do feel that I'm just running through matters and expecting you to agree, please do stop me. As the chairperson, I understand that I chair a democratic portfolio and committee. So we want to perform our oversight duties effectively, and I do not intend to stifle any debate. So if you do want to engage me further on certain matters, please do raise your hand if you wish to do so. No debate from any political party will be stifled. Honorable members, that takes care of the housekeeping. Honorable Deputy Minister, could you now introduce the CIRA presentation? I have proposed and the meeting has agreed that we will do the CIRA presentation, and then once we do the Civilian Secretariat's presentation on legislation, I will also allow for an input from CIRA on the Security Industry Amendment Act, which was assented to by the President. And I think we should congratulate the President when we get to that section. That, remember, honorable members, it was long overdue. You had requested that I meet with the President's team on that, which we have done. And the President has finally assented to this. I would like CIRA to, and the Deputy Minister to explain to us what this means. We will take it in more detail in a later session, but I think we do need to understand what it means and the implications for our country. Honorable Deputy Minister, the floor is yours.
Morning, Chair, and morning to the committee. The CEO of CIRA, and the delegation that is here. We appreciate the opportunity you have given us, Chair, to appear and account for what we have been doing for the financial year 2020-2021 in the form of an annual report that we are presenting to you. I'm proud to indicate that the board of CIRA and the CEO and the management have been consistent in their management of the affairs of CIRA and consistently have appeared before this committee to present a clean bill of health in terms of the resources that they were allocated, how they spent them. It's quite heartening that we have a team of men and women that consistently improve on their services to the country. And I think this has been a very good year for the family of SAPS in its entirety, that we have made an improvement in the areas that we are responsible for. But we are always mindful of the fact that it is not only through our efforts that we make this improvement. It's a product of the interaction that we have with the committee. The advice that we get from you, we take it earnestly, and we go and improve based on the critique that you give us from time to time. And we really appreciate appearing before you. It's always enriching, and we would like to thank you, Chair, and the committee for always being on your toes and giving us guidance that makes it possible for us to improve on our work. And of course, we will not take away the thanks that we should give to Mr. Chauke and the board for the good work that they've done, as we are presenting yet another clean audit from the entity. I think, yes, Chair, we agree with your observation that the Private Industry Act, Amendment Act of 2014, which took a very, very long time for it to be assented to, which the committee also had to play some role through yourselves and everybody concerned, but particularly the President. We should express our appreciation to him and Cabinet for having been decisive on this piece of legislation, because it's very, very important and crucial for the transformation of the sector and for ensuring that the sector is majority controlled by South Africans. Because the situation we have now, we do have certain structures that are predominantly controlled by foreigners. And I don't think we should be proud of that environment. So we really thank the president for having provided leadership in this regard to ensure that there is transformation in this regard, and it will be in the best interest of our country in the long run. I think the details of the issues, the CEO will elaborate when we discuss that matter, as you have suggested that we should talk to it as the civilian secretariat present on the legislation that we are currently processing as the South African Police Service. But thank you very much, Chair. We are mindful of the time constraints, so I should not belabor my space that I've been given, because members are going to disconnect earlier today because of the pressures of the work that they have. I should not belabor the point, but through you, request the CEO to lead us in the presentation of the annual report. Thank you very much once more, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. And again, kindly please accept my congratulations to the Minister, the National Commissioner, and especially to our board and our CEO, Mr. Chauke. Honorable Deputy Minister, please don't chair my meeting. I'd still like the chairperson of the board, Dr. Mofumi, to give us a slight input, because the doctor is also responsible for us getting a clean audit. DM, please don't tell me
accepted.
Who
has... Accepted, Chair. Accepted. My apologies, Chair Board. My apologies.
I'll kick you out of my meeting, DM. Doc, it's now your opportunity.
Okay, no, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning to you, Honorable Chair, and to the committee, and to our Deputy Minister. Good morning. Yes, I must appreciate the congratulatory message, Honorable Chair, and also indicate that as a board, we have recognized the fact that actually, during that performance, there was no board or there was no council for CIRA. And really, Mr. Chauke and his team, they worked very hard to make sure that there's still continuous governance, even in the absence of the council. So really, we appreciate your appreciation and recognizing that really that belongs to the management. And then with regards to today, we have got the director, and he is with his team. The CFO is here, the CEO, the COO, as well as other members of the management of the team. And without wasting any time, Honorable Chairperson, I'd like to hand over to Mr. Chauke, who will then give a direction in terms of the presentation. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and congratulations again. As the Chairperson, and thank you to the members of the Portfolio Committee for us appointing a board. Those are achievements we have accomplished as the Portfolio Committee. I also need to say that this committee has been doing sterling work. Yes, we do have our differences, but we can start seeing the changes which have been made. And I'd like to thank the colleagues in the committee for their support and their hard work. Doc, thank you to your board for overseeing the work of CIRA. I now hand over to Mr. Chauke.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the Chair, good morning to the Deputy Minister, to honourable members, members of the board and members of the Portfolio Committee and colleagues. Chairperson, we will take you through the presentation as you requested. We should start first with I just wanted to clarify that we should start first with the areas that deals with the legislation. Am I correct, Chairperson?
No, Mr. Chauke, you're going to do the legislation when we allow the civilian secretariat to do legislation. So I'll deal with all the legislation in the next when we do the next presentation. So can you just focus on your BRRR report? We'll give you an opportunity later.
Okay, no, thank you very much, Chairperson. I will just request that we move to the next slide. Chairperson, my colleagues have been introduced already. We will take you through the overall performance, operational performance, as well as per quarters. If I can get to, I'm already on the overview of the overall performance, Chairperson. The issue of the clean audit has already been announced, Chairperson. Thank you very much. An overall performance of 86% for the organization. And as you can see, we're also doing well in terms of prosecutions. I will go to the next slide. Thank you, Chair. In terms of the other achievements, we were able to collect 25.1 million in terms of fines. And we also did 251 public awareness campaigns in the year. I'm also noting that there is improvements in other areas of training, as well as inspections that we conducted, as well as certificates we issued in that year. These are the highlights. The next slide. Thank you, Chair. From here, I will hand over to, I can do this. Chair, as you might recall that in terms of the BBBR, there were certain recommendations that were made by the portfolio committee, which sought to address one or two of them. The first one was to improve the campaigns for public to understand the role of CERA. And I'm happy to announce that as of the 1st of April, we were able to do 25 public awareness campaigns, and we issued various media releases to address the role. The next slide, please. The other key area that was recommended by the portfolio committee was for us to address the issue of preferential appointment of South Africans who are currently unemployed and in the sector that we are in. We're working together with the Department of Home Affairs Immigration Section. We've done joint operations, and since then we were able to do 283 arrests out of 32 operations. And out of those, we found 48 of unregistered foreign nationals who encroached in the sector. And we were able to do inspections of those that were employed and deployed in various sites. And next slide, please. Thank you, Chair. I think I'm able to hand over to my colleague to take you over the overview of the performance, and then it will be followed by the CFO. Thank you. Mr. Stephen Baranost.
Thank you very much, Director. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm going to be dealing with the performance information. I'm just quickly want to see if the slide, there's slides moving. In terms of the financial year 2021, Chair, I think I need to highlight, first of all, that we as an entity decided not to table a revised annual performance plan for this year, and really focused on ways to still achieve our initial targets as COVID-19 struck and the hard lockdowns commenced. And I'm very pleased to highlight that of the 29 output indicators, we achieved 25. So we had 86% in a very, very difficult financial year. As far as the performance per program is concerned, this is just a breakdown. Program one, which is our support program, administration and finance, they achieved 91%. Law enforcement achieved all their performance target 100%. Program three, which is training and communication, achieved 86%. And then registration program achieved 50%, two out of the four indicators, but I'll highlight those particular areas. Chairperson, I'm going to go through the different programs, but what I will focus on is mostly the areas where we did not achieve. The presentation obviously highlights those programs that we, or output indicators we did achieve, but I think we'll pause a little bit on the non-achievement just to highlight some of the reasons and some of the mitigations. As far as program one is concerned, as I mentioned, it's the sub-programs, the finance and our corporate services, which is BIT, human capital. And then we have research and development in program one as well. It's our more or less our support program. I've already mentioned 91% of targets achieved. I'm not going to focus that much on the green. Obviously, our unqualified audit opinion, we're very proud of. And that is something that we want to maintain in terms of our clean audit. And the one area that we didn't achieve was the guarantee fund, product design and approval. As far as this is concerned, Chair, it's very much subject to the annual fees model being phased out and replaced with the levies model, which is currently with national pressure to introduce it as a money bill in Parliament. And once that is done, we will be able to capitalize this fund. Without that financial capital that will flow from the revised funding model, the guarantee fund will be out of reach. So we are hopeful that this is going to happen in the next year or two, and then we will be able to implement the guarantee fund for the industry. As far as the remainder of the targets are concerned, in the corporate services program, human capital and BIT, all targets were achieved. This is just a continuation of corporate services. And then in terms of industry research and development, five research reports and surveys and policies were completed. So that was all done. And summaries of these research and surveys are also captured in this presentation and in the annual report. As far as program two is concerned, the law enforcement program, which is more or less our core department as far as law enforcement activities are concerned, they consist of our compliance and enforcement department, which is our inspectorate and investigators and our prosecution unit. As I mentioned, all seven of their output indicators were achieved for the financial year, but I must add, when we look at these figures, especially the security officer inspections, we were during COVID-19 obviously impacted us from as an organization, but we continued with our law enforcement activities throughout the year. So obviously we were not, although there were a hard lockdowns, our law enforcement department was full out in the field and continuing with their work because security services was declared essential, and obviously we needed to ensure that the security industry complied. We also look at different ways in achieving targets, introducing compliance self-assessments and other programs for the industry to ensure that law enforcement activities continue. This is our enforcement output indicators in terms of investigations and criminal cases. It's fully achieved, including security persons inspected for firearms. And then I mentioned the issue of the self-assessment policy and processes, where we require businesses to do an annual compliance self-assessment themselves, submitted evidence with us for verification, and then we ensure that all industry members at least get one inspection and verification on compliance per annum. As far as prosecutions are concerned, we were 98% achievement, and that is really because of the high level of quality of inspections and investigations done by our compliance and enforcement department. As far as training and communication is concerned, Chair, this is our industry training force under this program, and then our marketing, communication, and stakeholder relations. They achieved 6 out of the 7 output indicators at 86%. The first part deals with training, and it's a turnaround time for finalizing accreditations and instructors. Even here, we initiated a couple of new things, Chair, during the lockdown levels. Obviously, contact learning became a challenge for the industry. We introduced self-learning, where we accredited training centers to do self-study in order for the industry to be able to continue learning during a very difficult year. As far as the one area that was not achieved, Jay, was the development of 3 specialized training curriculums in acid and transit, special events, and armed reaction. We really struggled during this financial year after going out for requests for quotations as well as an e-tender to get any appetite from external experts to develop these courses. But it's earmarked for this year, and we found a different way in order to get the specialists to assist us with developing this particular curriculum. As far as the remainder of the program is concerned, in terms of external assessments, we achieved our targets in the training department. As far as marketing, communication, and stakeholder relations is concerned, we achieved our target, although in a different way. It was very challenging. Some of our clients struggled, obviously, with the new way of doing meetings and workshops, but we found a way to be able to still achieve our targets in that area, and we entered an agreement with the Private Security Authority of Ireland as well in terms of our international focus in terms of regulation. As far as Program 4, the registration department is concerned, Chair, this department is obviously responsible for business and security officers' registrations. In this area, we only achieved 50%, 2 out of the 4 output indicators. The one output indicator deals with the turnaround time for business registrations, which we achieved. But the one on the individual registrations, we did not achieve. Our target was 14 days, the average was 20 days. And this is very much subject to the fact that our process is also subject to third-party providers for the criminal record verifications via the South African Police Criminal Record Center. They had challenges in terms of COVID-19 impact, and you know, they also had downtime on their system with the fingerprint identification system. So it had a direct impact on our turnaround time. Subsequently, you know, they have addressed it, but we've still experienced some of these challenges during this year as a result of COVID-19. And then the last area that we didn't achieve, Chair, was the online registration system being implemented. That was deferred to this financial year, and I'm pleased to say that we will be launching in the next week our online registration platforms for businesses as well as individuals. Chairperson, then the policy and concept model for the transformation charter, that was developed and that was approved by council on 29 March. As far as some of the activities are concerned, Chairperson, I'm not going to go much into detail, just to highlight, this is a breakdown of the inspections done at total inspections, a number of at businesses, a number of security
officers. My apologies, Mr. Chauke and Dim, can we agree that we don't go into details? You do have a clean audit, and the members could rather ask questions. We have received the presentations. So if you can just give us a summary, we don't need too many details today, because we'll rather ask questions and then you can provide us with answers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In that vein, I'm not going to go into detail with these figures here. It's just a breakdown of all the activities within the different departments in terms of what I've highlighted, including the overview of the statistical information in terms of the size of the industry, in terms of businesses and security offices, and some of the other breakdowns in terms of those stats, including the research documents that I've highlighted that was done, and the policies and surveys. This is just a breakdown of the human capital that's covered in the program. And then I'm going to hand over to our CFO on the financial information. Thank you very much, Chair.
Good morning, everybody. Slide number 63, we have, as indicated earlier, that we have unqualified audit opinion that is clean. However, when you in the previous slide, we have indicated that we are still struggling with our financial revenue model, where we have lots of impairment that we are doing. So we can see that our impairment has increased due to inability of security providers being able to service their debt. However, we still have made it through in that current model. We have action plan that we are pushing to have the Levies Act implemented, and we're still implementing the going concern turnaround strategy so that we are able to service our operational costs and also as build reserves. And also we are using debt collectors to ensure that we are able to collect money that is due to us. And another thing, issue that was emphasized by the AG is just a concern of the contingent liability. It's not a big amount, but in terms of the audit process, they have to emphasize on that. But we have legal experts, we have panel of legal experts that assist us to deal with cases as and when they come on board. So when we look at our financial overview, we have a slight increase in terms of our revenue We are happy that we did not fail to, there is an increase, even if it's not significant, but we made it that we moved from 316 to 317, and our expenditure has decreased. We have implemented cost containment measures and prioritized our expenditure, employee costs, how we hire, how we manage our procurement plan. So we have done very good on that one, that we managed to save, contain 9% of our expenditure. And we are proud to say, coming from a low surplus of 3.4 million, we ended the financial year, the COVID year, with a 33.3 million surplus. That will be the first at CIRA. It has never happened. We always range under 10 million, but we have learned through the COVID-19 and how to use the system to ensure that we still save this and adequate revenue to service our operational requirements. We also have cash reserved at the end of the financial year. If you look at the previous year, we had only 13 million, but this year we have closed at 37.4. And when we look at our financial in this current financial year, we're still doing very well on that one. And when you look at the next slide, we're just showing you our financial position. We have increased on our current, the assets, the total assets have increased by 40%, and our liability has also decreased on that in the last financial year. And when you look at our financial performance, we only struggled on our on contact revenue stream. You see that our training, where we had to keep people in the class and be able to train them, there's a slight reduction when comparing to the next financial year. However, in this current financial year, we have learned and we've put strategies in place. We are overachieving in this current financial year. And also the registration, you'll see that there's a difference there. We ended at 35 million as compared to 43 million. We struggled because of the lockdown restriction, where we were not able to have a lot of people in our offices, but we have strategies, bulk renewal and other methods that assisted us. We are also doing very well in this financial year because of the strategies that we implemented. And also, if you look at other revenue, where it includes where we visit our security officers to check whether they have before they register, so for compliance before registration. So it's a feeder to registration fees. So you'll see that most of, if you fail on registration, some of the factors, they will affect your other revenue because you won't go to the companies to verify. So we also did not do well because there were restriction in whether we can visit or not. And if the next part of expenditure, I've also highlighted it, that we have implemented cost containment measures, where we have looked at employee costs, how we prioritize employees, how we feel positioned, and we also on rental, we negotiated rental to be a lower the rate. When we were renewing the lease agreement, we negotiated the lease price to go down. And also in the next slide, you'll notice we're speaking to our cash flow. Then this one looks much more better, where we have a good cash flow. This is one of the things that when they check your going concern, they check whether you have cash that can service your debts. So we ended up with a good cash flow at the end of the financial year. And this slide just indicates how we are affected by the COVID. You see where we had 47 across the province, and then the affected people were only 62, but we have managed to still achieve. When we closed the offices in the next 3 days after opening, we were having catch-up plan to ensure that we still service the people that needed or that booked in our offices. And the next slide is just when we are just indicating the challenges and the solution. Our biggest challenge is loss of revenue. So we have operations in terms of that are done by law enforcement, and we negotiated lease, as I indicated earlier. And Also, we have a weekly cash flow management. And then we also, in terms of the cost report that we were talking to, we have done accreditation of training providers for self-study so that we can have that item of training revenue addressed. And then the next one is just continue using the debt collectors to assist us in recouping the debt that is owed to us. And then one of the things that is very key that our COO spoke to is online registration, that we are now going to become efficient, whether lockdown level 5 or 201, we're still going to be operational and still earn the revenue that we require. And what we also did under the levels, we also reprioritized the expenditure, critical position only, and then we minimized traveling and we are having an online meetings on regular basis rather than people coming to the office and traveling to our offices. Yeah, those are some of the things. And we're using internal venues available for consultation instead of going out and hiring venues. So also when we appoint consultants, we check whether do we have necessary skill insight. And also when we configure our system, if our IT people can do configure the system, we use internal rather than going out. And that's its chairperson. And that would be the end of our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the very good presentation. You could now all mute your mics and raise your hands. Honorable members, we have those presentations and I'm waiting for you to show your hands so that I could take your questions. Too many questions on the ground. If you have questions, you will not. I will not stifle debate. Could I see hands, Honorable Whitfield and Honorable de Blanche, in that order?
Honorable. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to Sierra, and congratulations on the clean audit. Chair, just as a introductory comment, and then two or three questions. Chair, I think it's important for the committee to note that the CIRA Council was not reappointed within the legislative framework. And this now joins a list of ministerial failures to comply with the legislative framework insofar as the appointment of the EDIPID and the DNA board. And I think it's a very serious oversight by the minister, and I would welcome an opportunity for us to interrogate the minister on his reasons for failing to comply with the legislation insofar as these important structures are concerned. Chair, I then just have some questions for CIRA in respect of the new act. I would be interested to hear from CIRA whether they have received any concerns or comments or correspondence from their members with respect to the Act, and whether they see any potential positive or negative aspects of the Act and its impact on private security in the Republic. And then in respect of the Firearms Control Amendment Bill, whether CIRA actually submitted comments to the Civilian Secretariat, and whether they have any concerns regarding the impact of the bill, should it become an act, and what would those concerns be? And then lastly, Chairperson, my question is, with respect to the Central Firearms Registry, it appears that the private security industry regulating authority has got a special touch or a special way that the rest of South Africa doesn't in order to get licenses for firearms. It is reported that nearly 1,800 firearms were licensed, and it's just not clear whether CIRA has an agreement, a sort of preferential treatment agreement with the Central Firearms Registry in terms of expediting licenses for private security firms in the industry. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Whitfield, Honourable Tablanche, Majozi, Mulekwa, and then Chimbeni in that order.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, thank you. I am covered to a large extent by my colleague. I just want to also congratulate Sira with the clean audit. And I really think that is a good achievement. Then just on the issue that the Honourable Whitfield also mentioned about, you know, the minister failing to comply with the legal aspects of appointing council, new councils, directors, etc. In the previous meeting, I also, well, the meeting that we had the other day with the secretariat, I also mentioned my concern that we are also running out of runway, the minister to you know, attend to the person heading up, you know, that department at the moment. I just want to mention that. Chairperson, then if you look at, you know, we have in the region of, you know, approximately 2.5 million registered security officers and 11,195 registered security businesses. And my question is, you know, we only about 550 security officers are currently employed. And my concern is what happened to the others now? What are they doing? Is it something that we know? And then, you know, within a depressed market, I'm not necessarily saying for the security industry, you know, I find it quite interesting that all these companies are still surviving. Chairperson, then, Sira is a defendant in a number of legal actions, and that is obviously unpredictable. What is going to happen? What is the outcome going to be? And my question is, to what extent does Sira make provision for whatever is going to happen, you know, with those cases? Should it be that they must pay out large amounts of money to meet that rulings in that cases? Chairperson, fruitless and wasteful expenditure also quite increased quite a bit. And I want to know the reason for that. Chairperson, and then, you know, Sira is dependent on the cooperation of, you know, the police. And I just want to hear from them what would they say is the quality of their relationship with the police. And then my last question, Chairperson, is about this initiative, the eyes and ears, crime prevention between the SAPs, business against crime, etc. What role are they playing there and what contribution is it making? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for those questions, General Tablanche. Honourable Deputy Minister, as you take down these questions, the comments made by Honourable Whitfield, which is seconded by Honourable Tablanche, is that we are very concerned about these councils which are not appointed or reappointed within the legislative framework. I'll have a bit more to say about us failing to comply with the law. You cannot defend the law if you do not implement the law. We would like the names of the Critical Infrastructure Council to present it to the committee. They were presented to the speaker, but it has to come to the committee for endorsement. There's a number of kind of timeframes which we are not meeting and which we are not respecting. The firearm amnesty came to an end quite a long time ago. There's a vacuum now without a firearm amnesty, and another number of people are now falling outside of the law, but they're not breaking the law intentionally. We are actually making it difficult for them to comply with the law. So we are creating our own headaches, and we cannot continue as if it is business as usual. A DM will give you time to respond to that later. Honorable Majozi, and then Molekwa, and then Shembeni.
No, thank you, Chair. Good morning to honorable members, the Deputy Minister, and colleagues from CIRA. No, mine, I think you've touched on that as well, Chairperson. I wanted to ask in terms of, because there was a question that I asked a while back, that there were people that were complaining that in the security companies, there are people that are busy beating people up, and they've got firearms, and what does CIRA know about that? And then can they maybe find out, in terms of the firearms amnesty, have they maybe consulted with the security companies to find out if there are any of their members who've got illegal firearms and maybe who are also foreigners and would not maybe belong on the registry of CIRA? And what I want to ask is that the debt collectors that they are using, are they winning with collecting their debt? What is happening? And then are they finding their feet, or people are responding or they are not responding? Because then it would be useless if you've got debt collectors but you are not receiving anything at the end, and you are busy paying for something that you are not receiving. And once more is to congratulate CIRA once again for getting a clean audit, and they are forever. I think that is one entity in the police that would not disappoint and would forever get unqualified or clean audits. And we congratulate CIRA, but I wanted to check on those two so that we also know that on the firearm amnesty process, are they involved? What is happening in their companies? Have they checked with every company that is under CIRA to make sure that there are no illegal firearms? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Majozi. Molekwa, Shembeni, and Moss. In that order, Molekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentation as presented by CIRA, and also congratulate them for being able to obtain clean audits for 3 consecutive years. I would like to encourage them to continue to raise the bar high. Chairperson, mine is not a question per se, but just a comment on the presentation. I just want to comment on the operation done by CIRA hand in hand with SAPS, where that operation was able to discover that some of the security companies hired or employed undocumented foreigners. I just want to encourage CIRA to continue with this operation, working hand in hand with SAPS, because the majority of the crime committed in our country are mostly committed by these undocumented foreigners, and they are untraceable. So I think working together with SAPS will also contribute positively towards fighting against crime in our country. So this operation, I think, will be important, especially in the fight against crime. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Shembeni. Majozi and Molekwa, you can lower your hands now.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. I'll start by congratulating CIRA for their 3rd consecutive clean audit. Secondly, Chair, I would like to know about the paying of the criminal background checks, the fingerprints issue of the applicants. CIRA paid almost 10.13 million in 2019-2020.
106.45 million in 2020-2021. And then my question is, why is SIRA paying for the criminal grounds check for applicants? Is this not a prerogative of the applicants to pay for their applications background checks? Number two, what percentage of debt is for small security businesses with 0 to 5 security officers employed and struggling to get contracts, which is affecting revenue collection? What is the number of small security businesses are in operation? What is the average amount owed by these companies? And then lastly, what number of security guards were killed during 2020-2021 if they break them down according to the provinces for us? And what number of civilians were killed by private security guards during 2020-2021? And how are these guards held accountable other than the normal criminal prosecutions? Lastly, Chair, I want to know about the so-called out of the 1,377 criminal cases that were opened against the non-compliant service providers, of which 473 cases were successfully finalized. What number of security guards have been successfully prosecuted during 2020-2021? On what offenses? What were the sanctions imposed? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Shembeni. Honorable Moss, you had your hand up, but I don't see your hand any longer. Are you still asking a question?
Yeah, Chairperson, I have only two questions to ask.
Continue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In the 2019-20, the authority have 12 employees on a fixed term contract, which increased to 36 employees on a fixed term contract in 2020-20 and 2021. Can SIRA explain the increase in the number of the contract workers? Secondly, Chairperson, what is the average duration of service of a contract employee? Then lastly, what kind of partnerships or projects have the authority? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Honourable Deputy Minister, you could start and then we could give the SIRA delegation an opportunity to respond. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think in terms of the issues of appointments that happened beyond the stipulated time, we take note of the observations of committee members, and it's a matter that we'll have to improve on to ensure that we try to do things as prescribed. We must be exemplary indeed. With regard to the SIRA, the Security Industry Amendment Act of 2014. Indeed, the president have signed that into law, and within it, it was talking to issues of ownership, which is section 22 of the act. But however, there is an understanding after presentation by both Minister of Trade and Industry and the Competition Commission and the Minister of Police that that particular aspect will need to be reviewed, which means that there will be a process that will ultimately come into Parliament for Parliament to look into that, because the Act as it stands, Section 22, deals with ownership. So that particular section will not come into effect as the Act gets implemented, and it will then go through the processes of review, ultimately leading to an amendment. I don't know the form that ultimately it will take, but as we speak, that is the process that is going to unfold. And this is it's a product of the presentations that have been made. But I think the secretary can talk to that matter further, because they are working closer on that particular aspect of legislation. Though the CIRA is also party to the processes, particularly around regulations in that regard. But I think he can talk to members so that we all have a common understanding on where we are with regard to this. Thanks very much, Chair, but I think let's allow the CEO to deal with the other aspects, and also to add on what I've said around the Security Industry Amendment Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. Mr. Chowkis?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, DM. Chairperson, I will deal with a few of the questions, and then I will last deal with the Amendment Act, and my colleagues will also step in to assist with the other questions. Whether we have received the comments on the CIRA Act, yes, indeed, we did receive some questions from members of the industry, largely. They wanted to know when is the Act fully coming into operation, and whether what will be required to comply with, and so on. As the Deputy Minister has already said, that the Section 20, Subsection 2, may have to be reviewed. So I do not think that I can deal so much with the implications thereof, of that section. But as you might know, that I think the section was certified to be constitutional. The other considerations that were done by the Minister of Police as well as the Minister of the Industry. Chair, with regard to the question as to whether CIRA was part of the submitted any comments on the firearms bill, CIRA was partly assisting in the drafting of the bill. Therefore, our comments would have been submitted there. We will also be presenting in that webinar that is being organized later on. There was also a question about 1,800 licenses, whether there's any special relationship between CIRA and the CFR for issuing of licenses. First of all, I must just make it clear that CIRA do not issue licenses at all. The role that we play is the role of verifying whether companies that have applied for licenses are registered with us and are compliant before they are issued with licenses. That's the role that we play. So the feedback that we're giving in the annual report is how many of those have been given a green light, and how many of those that have been, say, declined a green light. So that's as far as we get with regard to that. I will allow my colleagues to deal with the other question, but maybe let me handle the question regarding us being a defendant in a number of cases. Chairperson, the issue of us litigating or being in litigation at all times is quite inherent in the nature of the work that we do. We are a regulator, and we expect to be sued, and we expect to sue where we are enforcing the law and where the law is being enforced, and our decisions are mostly decisions that would affect quite a lot of people and companies. Therefore, we expect to be challenged, and it has been like that for over the years. We do make provision for such challenges, and I must add that we have recently even developed a policy as well as a framework that would allow us to make those what we call provision, contingency liability provisions for those legal matters. And I must say that the current ones, that policy has been analyzed by our Audit and Risk Committee, and we have also submitted it to the Auditor General. So we're quite very confident that even when we make those assessments and assumptions, we are quite very clear, we are guided by certain principles. But I must also talk to the current cohort of litigation that we have. Most of those cases are frivolous. I must say that to date, we have never paid any company whatsoever, any fees that we've lost or whatever, or case. Most of the cases that we do are cases that we're able to defend successfully because the law is quite very clear. My colleagues will deal with other questions and then I'll come back later. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chapke. You will indicate who will do the other responses?
Yes, the CFO will deal with the question of the wasteful expenditure, and the CEO will deal with other questions relating to the numbers, the registration numbers and so on. And the question on the debt collection, the CFO will handle that. CFO?
Thank you, CEO. The debt collectors, yes, they've assisted us. We've collected overdue debt, even the one that was also prescribed. So if you look at our management account, we have managed to collect more than what we have budgeted. It's over 100% of what we have budgeted, but we still continue with debt collection to assist us on collecting the overdue debt. And also one of the things in terms of the debt collection, it's a fee model we pay on collection. So we are not paying when the debtors, the company has not collected. And in relation to the question about how many companies, how is our debt structured in relation to the 026? The total number of security business, we have currently 11,613, and the number 026 is 9,476, which is 82% of our debt book. However, and the amount relating to the 9476, it's 84 million. However, one thing that we should note there that the current debt for this financial year up to 180 days is 59 million. So we have aged our debtors. So they are not too old. They are for this current financial year. So 59 million of 84 million is current. So it's not overdue debt. So we don't have, we looked at that 82% it's accounted for by the small companies. That's why we have an issue with the model that it's costing us to impair a lot. Thank you, Chair. And COO will respond on the others that are related to this. So.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the one question of what is the quality of relationship with the South African Police Service? Generally, we work with different departments within SAPS. From a launch and, an operations perspective, we work with the more of the local police stations, which we have a very good relationship with in terms of our operations and our activities as the law enforcement department. But we also obviously work with the Central Firearm Registry, where we believe there can be significant improvement in our relationship with the Central Firearm Registry. Although we have a working relationship with them, one of the issues that we've been requesting SAPS is to get access to the database in relation to the firearms within the sector. So, but those are the discussions we are having with our colleagues within SAPS to improve our relationship in terms of improved regulation. As far as the Eyes and Ears Initiative of SAPS is concerned, Chairperson, our primary role is to ensure that the private security industry that participates in these initiatives are legitimate and can act in that environment to become a valuable partner for the SAPS. So our activities are mostly concentrated on the legitimacy of the private security industry, who do play quite an active role in the community policing structures, neighborhood watch structures that are implemented. And our role is to ensure that they are, in fact, legitimate, and the staff that they deploy are, in fact, registered and trained. The question on the issue of security companies beating up people, yes, we do receive complaints about where security companies and the security officers overstep their bounds in terms of what they can and cannot do. And these matters are investigated by our law enforcement department. And in cases where there was a contravention or criminal activity, their registrations are suspended and ultimately withdrawn. Depending on the nature of the conviction in the criminal court, but also depending on the conviction of improper conduct by our own internal prosecution. As far as are there members with illegal firearms, yes, we do identify illegal firearms from time to time through our activities. As highlighted in our annual report, our inspectorate also conduct inspections at businesses that license for firearms. We do verifications on the number of firearms, whether they are licensed, whether the people are competent in the use of those firearms. And we submit the report to the Central Firearm Registry as well in cases where we find any irregularities, and we notify the SAPS, obviously, as far as that is concerned, opening criminal cases and working with SAPS as far as that is concerned. Chairperson, as far as the paying of fees for criminal record verifications are concerned, yes. CIRA, there's a third party provider appointed by the South African Police Service through which we work in terms of doing criminal verification checks of all applicants or natural persons applying for registration. Yes, we do pay a fee to this third party, but I also need to add that the application fee that we impose for the natural persons applying includes the costs associated with the applicant or the screening fee for the criminal record verifications. I'm also very pleased to announce that we've had very positive engagement with the integrated justice system. We made a formal application in the beginning of the year to the integrated justice system board for CIRA to be recognized to be integrated in the system, and that authorization has been given. So very soon we will be to having direct access to the integrated justice system, and they are working with the integration with the Criminal Record Center of SAPS, which will result in us going through directly for the IJS. Chairperson, in terms of the number of guards killed and number of civilians killed by guards, we can't give that information now, but we will give that information at a later stage. We do engage the Department of Labor as well on this. We have engagements with the, of course, all industry on duty, all injury on duties and things like that are reported to them, and we get that information via them. Chairperson, I think I've covered all the questions. I just want to see the same on the civilians. We don't have that information, but we will engage the South African Police Service in order for us to assist us with that.
Mr. Chauke?
May I continue, Chair?
Yes, Mr. Chauke.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to add on the question of firearms amnesty, whether we had participated in that on behalf of our members. We haven't done that, Chairperson. We are not involved in the amnesty processes and so on. That is the domain of the South African Police. Thank you. And also, just to add on the answer that was given regarding the numbers of employees that were killed and the civilians, Chair, we do not have those numbers, but we have made provisions for that in the Amendment Act. The current Amendment Act will actually compel security companies to report those numbers to us. in particular with regards to the discharge of firearms, fatalities, as well as some of these injuries. So we will have these numbers and be able to report them in future independently from other departments. Chair. And I think, Chair, we have covered quite a number of questions. The other questions relating to the employees, we will be coming back, Chair, with those answers. I think those needs to be calculated on the annual reports so that we do not give the wrong numbers. I think there was a question about what is the average employment of contract workers. Normally, Chair, most of the contract workers that we have are interns, and they normally work with us for a year, and after which we either employ them or either they resign and get employment elsewhere. But most of, we have a very good record in terms of hiring those that we've worked with. In fact, in most of the cases, we do hire those interns that work with us. Chair, I'm not sure if the question regarding the fruitless was answered. This is the only question I see outstanding here. CFO? Have we covered the question regarding the fruitless and wasteful expenditure?
Okay, thank you, CEO. The fruitless and wasteful that are in the books, we have investigated all those. We have system in place that is working, and the two main fruitless that are in our books, they are in relation, we have implemented consequence management, and we two of the employees that were charged with the fruitless and wasteful, they were they were charged with, and they were dismissed, both of them. The biggest ticket items that were are shown in the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and also on the other ones that are very small, but we have also implemented internal control to ensure that we don't incur such. So we have we are working very closely. We have a fraud and forensic unit that is dealing with assisting us to investigate and making sure that we put internal control to ensure that we eliminate the fruitless and wasteful. But consequence management has been implemented, and we continuously recover on those that we can as part of our consequence management. And we also implement internal control to eliminate them from recurring. Thank you.
I think that will be all. I'm not sure if there's anything outstanding, but it looks like we've covered most of the questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chauke. Thank you very much to your staff and team for the sterling work done and the very good presentation and responses you have given. I'm not going to take any further questions or follow-up questions. Honourable members, if you do have any further questions, please direct them to Dr. Kinnis and Babalwa, and we'll certainly ensure that you do receive responses. I'm now going to take the presentation on the legislation, Honorable Deputy Minister. We have Delina Haley from Legal Services. She will also assist us. Mr. Chauke, please don't leave the platform. We're going to do the bit on the Security Industry Amendment Act and what this the extension of the act means for us as a committee and the work we need to do. I do know that there's quite a number of steps which have to be followed. Amongst them would be the regulations that we now need. I would like to commend the board and the CEO and really thank the council and the board for the work they have done. Doc, you were one of the women which we recommended and that we really wanted appointed, and you are really showing us that you can oversee the work and that you are doing quite well. The next item would be the legislation. Before we do start, I would really like to thank Mr. Rapia as the Secretary of Police, who will be leaving us on the 20th of December, as he told us the last time. Mr. Rapier, you as the head of the Civilian Secretariat, you turned the Civilian Secretariat around, and we would like to thank you for that. You really, Mr. Rapier, have shown us that irrespective of the pressure we've put on you, this committee and its chairperson, I don't know who that chairperson is, but certainly the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Police has put you under tremendous pressure, but you have responded by improving the pace at which you do your work and the quality of work you've delivered. I personally would like to thank you, and I'd like to thank you on behalf of the committee for the work you have been doing, for responding to us and responding swiftly and in a very professional manner. However, again, the however, Honorable Deputy Minister, as our members have said, Honorable de Blanche has also said, the term of office of the Secretary of Police comes to an end, and we wouldn't like a vacuum developing there. Could you please, Honorable Deputy Minister, convey our messages to the Minister that he needs to give us a report on who will be, even if we have an interim head, we do not want an interim head for too long. We're in the middle of important pieces of legislation, and we would want those amendment bills to be converted to acts before we complete our term of office as a committee. Honorable committee members, before they do start, those mandates you have given me, where I had to engage with the president, I do think that you could now safely say that we are making progress. It has taken a long time, but you will see the development. I'm still not pleased with the time that you are using. It's just too long, Honorable Deputy Minister. The amendment bills just take too long to get back to us. And as a committee, our main task is to ensure that we do have the acts that we have passed during our term of office. From Parliamentary Services, you'd be, I'll first ask Mr. Rapier and his team to do their presentation. Then I'll ask Mr. Chauke, and then I'll ask Parliamentary Legal Services to do their presentations. Honorable members, you'll have three presentations. So please jot down your questions, and after those presentations, I'll allow you to do your questions. I will start now with Mr. Rapier. You could indicate, Deputy Minister, my apologies, first you, and then Mr. Rapier. Honorable Deputy Minister.
No, thanks very much, Chair and members of the committee, the Secretary for Police, Mr. Rapier. I should also echo your words to appreciate the sterling work he has done, the leadership he has provided to the institution, and his immense contribution to legislation and policing work generally. He's highly appreciated and commended. We have taken note of your observations, Chair, and the comment of the members when they raised issues as we're dealing with Sarah's presentation. We take note of that, and we will try our level best to comply with the regulations and guidelines that are there in terms of how we should process issues. The Secretariat who is going to lead us, and the Secretary, Mr. Rapia, will lead the presentations. And I see that there are serious time constraints now, so I should request Mr. Rapia to come in, Chair, through you. Thank you.
Thank you, DM. Mr. Rapia, you may start your presentation. Mr. Rapia, please don't go into the details. I do not want to call you to order. I know you're moving towards the 20th of December, so please, we want to end your presentation on a very good note today. So please don't give us your presentation in detail. You're doing very good work, and I'll rather allow the members to ask questions. They have received your presentation. Mr. Rapia?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members. I'm really humbled by your words of gratitude, and I'm very grateful that I was given an opportunity to lead this institution and to function in this big ministry. And for me, the 20 years is like graduating, because I have learned a lot, and the experience that I have got in this portfolio, I can't get it in any university. The presentation will be led by Advocate Bell, who is, we are also accompanied by Dr. Jacobs, who also is part of the team that leads in terms of legislation drafting process. I will hand over to Advocate Bell to take us through the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Advocate Bell. You may start.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members, Honourable DM, Secretary, and all colleagues. I'm going to just quickly go through what I'm going to talk about, Chair. I'm going to deal with the theft amendment bill, the Poxitara amendment bill, the firearms control amendment bill, the criminal forensic procedures amendment bill, which is commonly known as the DNA amendment bill, the IPRIT amendment bill, the secondhand goods amendment bill. I'll touch briefly on those because those have now no longer become a priority as the ones that I've just mentioned now, but it doesn't mean we're not working on them. The stop theft amendment bill, and I just wanted to also just talk on the CERA Amendment Act, the process that we followed thus far, and also on the critical infrastructure protection regulation. So if we move then to slide three, Chair, I'm going to try and summarize as much as I can, because as Chair has mentioned, that the presentation has already been circulated. So, Chair, after the publication of the South African Police Service Amendment Bill in the Gazette, a number of public awareness meetings were conducted, and we took into consideration comments that emanated from those meetings. And at those meetings, Chair, there was it included heads of provincial departments for community safety, SELDA, PDS structures, staff, and metro members. We took into consideration their concerns and their comments and their suggestions, as well as those written comments that came in as a result of the publication in the Gazette. So, Chair, all we are left with now is the issue of the transfer of the community policing functions from the police service to the MECs and provincial secretariats, and the implications on the budget at provincial level. So, Chair, just safe to say that we have followed all the processes under the guidance of National Treasury, and National Treasury was satisfied with the processes that we have made. They have, however, you can go to slide four, on slide four, you'll see the Chair, that National Treasury has stated that SAPS must prepare the costing and the costing of the expenses and the functions that are related to the CPS and the community policing board. So at the moment, as I mentioned, that's the only outstanding issue that we have. So if we go to slide five, you'll see that there's been requests that have been made on this issue to the National Commissioner. We are expecting to get something response from him by the end of this month. Chair, the Office of the Chief State Advisor has confirmed that we will receive the certificate on the constitutionality of this bill on or around December, the 8th of December 2021. And we have also been issued with a final certificate from the SAIS unit. from the unit in the presidency for consideration. Chair, there's a subscriber here to say that it's anticipated that this bill will come to Parliament early in 2022. But before I go to the issue of the SAPS amendment bill, Chair, as the drafting team was in the process of drafting, the drafters were cognizant of judgments that were being handed down by the various courts that impacted on SAPS and factored such into the draft bill. One such judgment, Chair, that was handed down by the Constitutional Court in the matter of the residents of Industry House and others versus the Minister of Police and others. This was handed down on the 22nd of October 2021, and it dealt with issues in section 13 sub 7 sub C of the SAPS Act. Chair, the necessary adjustments in terms of this judgment that were proposed have been amended, have been made into the bill, and this revised text was submitted to the Office of the Chief Technology Advisor on the 26th of October this year. And as I said, they said they will supply us with their final opinion on or around the 8th of December. So if we can move on then, Chair, to the protection of constitutional democracy against terrorist and related activities amendment bill. Chair, suffice it to say that this bill has been through the publication in the Gazette, and we've received comments.
Could you please assist me with your slideshow? I'm not following where this is on your slide.
Okay, we're on slide 6, Chair.
But here, I don't know if there's something wrong with me, but I'm still on 1.
Yeah, the slide is not moving, Chair. I tried to alert the Secretary about that.
It's moving on our side. We're not sure what's going on, Chair. It's moving. We're on slide 6 on our side.
If you can reload it.
Oh, so it's not my fault.
No, it's not your fault, Chair. The slide is static. They must reload it.
Thanks, DM, because I was having troubles here.
Okay, we just have to sort it out. Sorry about that, Chief. We're reloading.
Oh, my teaching. Yo.
DM, please, I can hear you speaking.
I'm sorry, Chair.
Please continue now. Is it better now? Continue.
Chair, I'm on slide 6. Are we all there?
Ah, no, you're still showing me slide 1.
And now, Chair?
So, can you help us, please? What is happening? Why am I on 1 and 6? All right, now you're on 6.
On 6. Now okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, but now could you please... No. Oh, now you see it very small. Some of us, we wear spectacles. Yes?
Me too. May I proceed, Chair?
You can proceed. But thank can you Chair. Please put it on slideshow now? It's not on a slideshow.
Put it on the slideshow. On our side, it's showing that it's on the slideshow, Chair.
Oh, something is not happening. Doctor,
can you speak? If I could assist, go to the 3 little dots, click on it, and undo presenter view. Hide presenter view. Go to hide presenter view. Go up, hide presenter view. Yes, click on that. Click on that.
Yes. Okay. Right, Chair, now we'll be on the second bill, Chair. the Protection of Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorism and Related Activities Amendment Bill 2021. Chair, just suffice it to say that this bill has now been, we are now in the process of taking the bill through the JCPS cluster to cabinet, and this process will begin tomorrow, Chair. So if I can move on then, and then also that we are anticipating taking it to Parliament in early in 2022. So if we can move into the firearms, Chair, on slide 8. Chair, are you okay? Can I proceed, Chair?
You're doing very well now. You can you're doing very well now. Can continue.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, now dealing with the Firearms Control Amendment Bill. All right, so Chair's bill was published for public comment, and comments were coming in at a rate of about 2,000 a day. And by the end of the count of the date when the public comments of stopped, there were over 118,000, but just a little less than 119,000. So I want to jump a few slides because it's all in the information is there. Okay, so if we can go to slide 9, Chair. From the date that the bill appeared in the Gazette, we became inundated with prior requests on the policies that informed the bill and the sales and basically the content of the bill. So the majority of the comments in the bill was rejected in its entirety. And most notably, there was tremendous pushback on the provisions that proposed repeal, such as the self-defense, collective reloading of ammunition, and so on. So in light of the above, of these issues, Chair, it was deemed appropriate and necessary to obtain legal advice on the constitutionality of the proposed deletion of these sections, including the cost implications that would follow the deletion. So the chief sector advisors have been requested to submit a legal opinion on the constitutionality of the deletion of sections 13, 14, 17, and 18 in the Principal Act, and we're still waiting for that. So if we move on to 10, so by sheer virtue of this pushback and resistance by the stakeholders in their written comments, media statements, threat of court action, as well as requests for bilaterals, the CSPS did not want to be accused of having bilaterals with some members, with some stakeholders and not others. So the idea of a webinar was proposed to the minister. So the minister approved the webinar to take place on the 11th and 12th of November. However, once again, some stakeholders expressed dissatisfaction with the way in which the webinar was being handled and strongly opposed it and requested more time to prepare for it. So there were issues such as who would be allowed to speak and who would not be allowed to take part, time frames, speakers were given to prepare, and even the proposed themes that we had proposed, they were objected to. So the webinar was then postponed in order to conduct the bilaterals to pave the way for more amicable drafting of the firearms control amendment bill. So that's where we are at the moment with that achieved. Then if we move on to slide 11, we go on to the DNA amendment bill. Chair, this bill has been approved by cabinet for introduction, and the letters have been drafted and signed off by the minister to the Speaker of the National Assembly and the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, and the final certification Office of the Chief Secretary Advisor has said that they have already processed it to the bill department, so that bill is on track. We are waiting to hear on the process that will follow this for introduction. If we move on to the IGRID bill on slide 12, are you still following, Chair?
Yes. If I have a problem, I'll stop you.
Thank you, Chair. So in terms of the IGRID bill then, a concern was raised, Chair, as a result of a number of incidences involving law enforcement officers where there appears to be no recourse in their actions, as there is with SAPTA and Metro Police. So to include them under the mandate of IFAS, over their oversight mandate. And so a legal opinion was sought from the Office of the Chief Legal Advisor. However, the Chief Legal Advisor stated that the extension of IFAS oversight mandate to include these law enforcement officers appointed by the municipalities would be tantamount to trampling on trampling on municipalities' rights to exercise its powers and perform its functions as provided for in the Constitution, and therefore will not pass constitutional muster. Furthermore, there's the road traffic law enforcement officers are subject to the National Road Traffic Act and the National and the Road Traffic Management Corporation Act, as well as the National Road Traffic Code. Therefore, the oversight mechanism in respect of the conduct of provincial road traffic officers, law enforcement officers, are provided for in the Constitution and other legislation. As a result, ICE's mandate cannot be extended to include an oversight role over these officers. So the drafters had to go back to the drawing board and meanwhile, and redraft the whole bill. So mean, and remove all those sections that referred to the ICE's oversight mandate being extended. The inputs, so what we did was we also circulated the bill to National Prosecuting Authority to staff and to ICE's legal and ICE's investigators for inputs. And these have been received. The main concern was the extension, the inclusion of the extension of ICE's mandate to investigate misconduct and offences committed by members that are off duty as well. So that we have an issue with that, and based on that and other concerns, constitutional concerns that were raised, we've again asked for the state advisor to give us an opinion on this. And this opinion, Chair, is being awaited before we can continue. But in the meantime, there is a draft bill, but we're just waiting to hear now where we have to make amendments, if any, to what we have already proposed. So if we move on to 13 and Chair, slide 13, we deal with the second hand goods amendment bill. And just to say that this bill has been drafted and the SAS report has been considered by the SAS unit in the presidency. And then on slide 14, Chair, in terms of the stock test amendment bill, the consultation, the internal consultations are still ongoing, and there's been comments that have been incorporated into the bill, and and at the same time, the SAS report is being populated. We go on to the slide 15, which speaks on the Private Security Industry Regulation Amendment Act of 2014. As all know, the President has assented and signed the private business law, this bill into law. It is now an act. And we are now, together with the CEDA, going to draft the regulation. CEDA has already committed to begin with that. And the CFCS have also developed a template to assist with the process, which includes the implementation of the Act. And this has been shared with CEDA's colleagues. In terms then of the last slide, Chair, which is the Critical Infrastructure Protection Regulation, the members of the Council have been appointed, and all the processes leading up to the finalization and the dispatch of the appointment letters have been dealt with, and these letters have been dispatched to. And that brings me to the end of my presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate Bell, for the very good presentation. I'll now call upon Sira. If you have a presentation, you can do it now. If not, you could just say so and we'll ask the questions. And then I'll take the legal services from Paul. Sira, do you have any presentation? Mr. Appiah, do we have any? You done, Mr. Appiah? Sira, do you have a presentation? Mr. Chauke?
Chairperson, we are done on our side.
All right, so we can now go to parliamentary legal services. Do you have a presentation?
Yes. My apologies, Chair. I was struggling to unmute myself. I do have. Chair, my apologies. I was struggling to unmute myself. I do have a four slide presentation, yes.
Yes, you may continue.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure whether the presentation is already visible on your side.
Yes, Mr. Chauke, you can continue.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not going to take long. I just want to add to talk more on to the overview of the implementation plan, maybe just to sensitize the members that if the Act has to be put into operation, there's a couple of administrative functions that needs to be performed. First of all, when one zooms into Section 20, subsection 2, the one that deals with ownership and regulations, there's two steps that needs to be done there. First of all, that we need to prepare regulations within a period of 6 months before that. And within a period of 2 years, we need to verify ownership of those, ownership of security businesses within the country. There's another process that needs to be done, that is the exemption advisory committee that needs to be done within 6 months of the promulgation of the Act. And there's the section that also deals with renewal of registration that needs to be done within 2 months. And if I recall very well, the Act wants that process to be implemented within 2 years. I haven't factored it in here. And there's also other processes that deals with training that also needs to have a good time period. But what is important, Chair, that I wanted to bring to the attention of the committee is that these regulations that we are talking about, particularly that those that deal with, if I were to go back, the issue of the different percentages of ownership, these regulations must come to Parliament. They need to be processed through Parliament. Most of the regulations, as well as the regulations that deal with the advisory committee, must come to Parliament. The advisory committee must also be appointed by the minister. The appointment must happen 6 months before, within 6 months of the commencement as well, of the Act. And there's also transitional amendments that must be also be factored in 2 months before the amendment of the Act. So, Chair, most of the regulations needs to be processed within Parliament within 15 months of the commencement of the Act. They must be processed within Parliament. We are currently busy trying to outline how many of the drafts we have and to deal with, to work with the Civilian Secretariat to start drafting the rest of the outstanding drafts and to bring those drafts through the process of consultation as well as the process of certification through the Office of the State Chief Law State Advisors, and then ultimately bring them to Parliament. So those will be the processes that will be taking place. I hope I was quick enough, Chair, but then I'm happy to also share the presentation. We will do a detailed presentation at later stage. What will also be outstanding, it will be the issue of coming together with the budget for the implementation and to look at what processes will be changing for the implementation of the Amendment Act. But of central to it, Parliament will be processing most of those regulations, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chauke. Could I now ask the Parliamentary Legal Services?
Good morning, Chair. My name is Talana Halley-Starkey, and I've been requested to unpack the legal opinion that I drafted for the committee and circulated to this committee on the 4th of November, 2021. So if I can just get started. I'll try and be as brief as possible. Yes?
Ms. Halley-Starkey, you need to not be as brief as possible.
Okay. I was just mindful of your time. That's the time.
No, we need to understand because you have sent me correspondence, and I'm quite worried about the constitutionality of our acts, which means that we as a portfolio committee have to tighten up our work. You have heard that the members, Honorable Whitfield, De Blanche, we have commented on the fact that we are not very alert when it comes to implementing the acts, and it is our responsibility to hold the executive to account. Please, you can continue, Ms. Haley.
Thank you, Chair.
Haley or
what? It's Haley. Haley.
You have a double barrel. It's Haley.
Yes, Haley Stocky.
I'm sorry, Haley Stocky. You may continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. As a way of introduction, just the purpose of the opinion that was circulated to you on the 4th of November, the Constitutional and Legal Service Office usually considers gaps and identifies defects in legislation and brings these various defects to the committees of Parliament. The opinion that we had sent advised the committee on the Constitutional Court case of resident of Industry House, 5 Davies Street, New Doornfontein, Johannesburg and others versus the Minister of Police and others. The opinion advised the committee on the case's impact on the South African Police Act 68 of 1995, the SAPS Act. And in particular, the opinion advised the committee on the constitutional invalidity of Section 13(7C) of the SAPS Act. The background to that matter. On the 22nd of October 2021, the Constitutional Court found that Section 13(7C) of the SAPS Act was inconsistent with the Constitution. Section 13(7) of the SAPS Act provides that Section 13(7A and B provides that where it is reasonable and in order to restore public order, the National or Provincial Commission may, in writing, authorize an area to be cordoned off. And then Section 13(7B) goes on to say that the cordoned off area will not be longer than 24 hours, will not be cordoned off for longer than 24 hours. Now, Section 13(7C) is what we're looking at and what is was found unconstitutional. And Section 13(7C) says, upon receipt of the written authorization referred to in paragraph A, any member may cordon off the area concerned or part thereof and may, where it is reasonably necessary in order to achieve the object specified in the written authorization without a warrant, which is the concern that the Constitutional Court had, search any person, premises or vehicle or any receptacle or object or whatever nature in that area or part thereof and seize any article referred to in Section 20 of the Criminal Procedures Act found by him or in the possession of such a person or in the area or part thereof. Provided that a member executing a search under this paragraph shall, upon demand of any person whose rights are or have been affected by the search or seizure, exhibit to him or in or her any copy of the written authorization. The facts of the matter. The facts of the case are as follows. The applicants were 2,852 residents of 11 various properties in Johannesburg's inner city. The respondents are the Minister of Police and the National Commissioner of SAPS. Between June 17 and May 18, the homes of the applicants were searched. And the searches were all conducted in the following manner. SAPS acted in the course and scope of the employment. Each resident was forced outside. Each resident was then fingerprinted and copies of the identity documents were demanded. If you were not in possession of a South African ID or foreign passport or visa, then you were detained immediately. SAPS also broke down doors. They searched and seized personal belongings. And at no point was any of the residents given a warrant or written authority. The residents then took the Minister of Police to the High Court, and the High Court found as follows. It held that paragraphs A and B of Section 13(7) of the SAPS Act was constitutionally valid, as it did not infringe on the right to privacy, which is found in Section 14 of the Constitution. Although the power to cordon off an area, which is found in Section 13(7A) of the SAPS Act, is an important mechanism for SAPS to discharge its constitutional mandate, Section 13(7C) of the SAPS Act infringed on the right to privacy. And it gave the police carte blanche, so to speak, to enter any home within the cordoned off area. The High Court matter was then remanded to the Constitutional Court for confirmation proceedings. The Constitutional Court disagreed with the applicants that the whole of Section 13(7) was unconstitutional. It held that only a portion of the section that permitted warrantless searches without the appropriate safeguards was unconstitutional. The court held further that the purpose of Section 13(7A) of the SAFT Act was to ensure public safety and public order. It stated that this could be achieved without any searches, whether warrantless or otherwise. The Constitutional Court, when it had to analyze the constitutional validity of Section 13(7C) of the SAFT Act, held as follows. The right to privacy was infringed, as Section 13(7C) of the SAFT Act does not specify the time searches may occur, and SAFT may search anything. If warrantless searches under Section 13(7C) was removed, then Section 13(7A) and B cannot result in unlawful searches of a cordoned off area. However, the court has also considered the limitation of the right to privacy. It held that the goal of Section 13(7) was to ensure public safety. And yes, there is a rational connection between warrantless searches and public safety. However, there are less restrictive means available to fulfill those objectives. If need arose, Section 21 and 22 of the CPA could then apply. In conclusion, the Constitutional Court held that a part of Section 13(7C) permitting warrantless searches without any appropriate safeguards is inconsistent with Section 14 of the Constitution, the right to privacy. Section 13(7) can be seen as being disproportionate to its purpose, as it can be deployed for ulterior motives. Section 13(7A) and B are constitutionally compliant, but the portion of Section 13(7C) does not pass the constitutional muster. The portion that permits warrantless searches of a person's home or vehicle and any receptacle or object is in the cordoned off area. It confirmed the High Court's order of invalidity. Therefore, the Constitutional Court severed the unconstitutional part of Section 13(7C) and provided a read-in. And over here, I provide sort of detailed explanation as to what the Constitutional Court did. So as you can see, the Constitutional Court removed without a warrant, struck it out, and then added a section after the struck out section and said, and within the cordoned off area, comma, search any person, premises or vehicle, or any receptacle or object or whatever nature, and then added this part here in terms of Section 21 and 22 of the Criminal Procedures Act. Therefore, linking the section to Section 21 and 22 of the Criminal Procedures Act. And that's just to say that the judgment was prospective and was from immediate effect. So there was no retrospectivity to this judgment. As a way forward, since there's no suspension of this order, there is no urgency to amend the Act. However, although the court has, in essence, amended the Act by virtue of the reading that I just explained a moment ago, it would be good for this to appear in the statute books. And this can be done by two ways. By way of oversight, the committee could ask the Department of Police what it intends to do. Perhaps there is an executive bill in the pipeline. Or by introducing a committee bill, as there is a policy, so to speak, and the wording provided by the court. If the committee wants to pursue this option, I would then suggest that the committee meets with the department to confirm whether the wording proposed by the court is implementable. And this brings me to the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hayley Starkey. That was quite an informative presentation. And thank you very much for the way forward. There's certainly certain things we have to do as a committee. And your advice has been taken very seriously. And we'll continue doing our work. Honourable members, before I do take further questions, the first thing is that we should ask, and I am of the opinion, and I'd like to propose to the committee, that we hold back the Firearms Control Amendment Bill. So this will allow SAPS to sufficiently consult so that these stakeholders and people do not flock to Parliament and to the committee with all their complaints. We have received tremendous pushback on the Firearms Control Amendment Bill, and I do not think that the matter has been dealt with adequately. I do believe that there's so much more work that needs to be done. So if you agree with me, honorable colleagues, let us send them back and ask them to hold back on the Firearms Control Amendment Bill. The Secretariat should focus on the SAPS Amendment Bill, as Ms. Hayley has just presented to us, Ms. Hayley Starkey. There are certain things which we have to do. Again, the SAPS Act has been found to be unconstitutional. We have to correct the SAPS Act. And that SAPS Amendment Bill has to be fast-tracked. I do think that when it comes to the IPED Amendment Bill, the SAPS Act and the IPED Amendment Bill and the DNA Amendment Bill should be the three priority bills for us as a portfolio committee. We are the custodians of overseeing the implementation of the law as a committee, but the police cannot enforce the law if they break the law. I repeat this over and over again. The police have to oversee the implementation of the law, and if they are guilty of offences off duty, then it is of serious concern to us. I do not respond to bringing media matters to the committee, but what has been reported from the portfolio committee in Gauteng is that 500 police officers are still in their positions, even though they face charges of murder, rape, domestic violence. It was really shocking. So, honourable members, if you have any detail that you'd like to know or questions that you'd like to ask now, I'd allow that. But what I brought to the committee was more for processing, and I do know that you will not be able to give detailed comments today. On the matter of these pieces of legislation that we want passed as a committee, I would urge members to give me detailed inputs in writing. And this should be sent to me, not to the Civilian Secretariat. Because when it comes to the amendments of bills, as a committee, we are leading this. And it is time for us to now put pressure and add pressure on the Civilian Secretariat and SAPS to get these amendment bills through as soon as possible. From each opposition party, I expect your detailed inputs, and I'll remind you in the committee if you have not given me your detailed inputs. We have to oversee this process, and we are serious about doing our work when it comes to having our acts in line with the Constitution. I have noted the hands of Honorable Whitfield and De Blanche. I'll do it in that order. But please do not forget that I'm recommending that this Firearms Control Amendment Bill, I don't have time for that now. I do propose that they should go back, and we will give them our inputs, send them back, and ask them for further work on the Firearms Control Amendment Bill. The DNA Amendment Bill, we should focus on this one, the SAPS Amendment Bill, and the IPET Amendment Bill. So please give me your comments on what I'm proposing. Honorable Whitfield.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first say that I fully support your recommendation to postpone dealing with the Firearms Control Amendment Bill, given the complexities and sensitivities surrounding that bill. So you have my full support on that issue. I also want to thank the Civilian Secretariat for their work on the DNA Bill, Chair. You will know that this is an issue very close to my heart and to the committee's hearts. We first raised this in August 2019. It has taken an unacceptably long time for it to get to this point, but it is here and it is going to make a tremendous impact in our criminal justice system, and something the committee can be incredibly proud of once it is passed into law. Chair, I would just make...
Honorable Whitfield, please don't forget to thank the Chair for listening to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for listening and not listening selectively, but with an open mind. I appreciate it. Chair, the issue with the IPED bill, I would just make this one comment, and I will make detailed input. It is something that I think is perhaps being overlooked, which is the issue of entrenching the independence of IPED within that amendment bill, specifically the manner in which the executive director is appointed. I didn't see that in the list. But it will certainly be transmitted to you in fine detail so that we can make that important amendment into the bill. Then, Chair, the issue with the unconstitutionality, thank you very much, Ms. Haley Starkey, for that presentation. I just have a question, Chair, perhaps to you or to Ms. Haley Starkey, with respect to the current process of the SAPS Amendment Bill. Is the shortest route to correct the statute not for us to amend the Amendment Bill via the committee process once it comes to us? Alternatively, Chair, I would propose that the committee very seriously consider a committee bill if the executive arm has not yet pursued the route as recommended in the presentation, because I believe a committee bill would be the quickest route if we cannot amend the current draft SAPS Amendment Bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Whitfield. You can understand why I asked the Parliamentary Legal Services to do a presentation to the committee. And again, I'd like to thank Ms. Haley Starkey for the very good presentation. This committee will be held responsible if we are overseeing any act which is unconstitutional. So, Honorable Whitfield, I am requesting detailed presentations and comments to me. Again, I will follow up with the Parliamentary Legal Services, and I'll follow up with the ministry, a DM. I do realize you do take copious notes and you do respond very professionally and accurately to all the questions I ask. And we'll also then follow up with the Secretariat of Police, the Civilian Secretariat, for the responses. I would like to collate all your comments and then take it to them as a package, with, as you had noted, Honorable Whitfield, prioritizing certain bills, amendment bills, which you'd like to have prioritized as members. Honorable Whitfield has been consistent in asking for the DNA Amendment Bill, and we'll fast track that. We've had serious discussions about the weaknesses and the flaws of the IPED Act. So what we have commented on as a committee must be built into the structures of these amendment bills that we have to do. Again, the Secretariat has already indicated that they have made the amendment on the SAPS bill. So if Honourable Members and Honourable Whitfield, you accept that, the Secretariat, because we have been engaging with the Secretariat on the outcomes of the Constitutional Court, we are doing quite a bit of work outside of the committee and behind the scenes. Again, Deputy Minister, we want to build sufficient consensus around these amendments. And as you can see, that there's no consensus around the Firearm Control Amendment Bill. And it's going to take us long, even as a committee, to build that consensus. And if there's no consensus in the committee, it's just going to take you very, it's going to be very difficult for you to even bring it to us. Let's rather have that consensus before it is taken to cabinet and before it is brought to the committee. You need much more and further consultations with the public on that Firearms Control Amendment Bill. Honourable Tablanche, we are saying quite a bit, and you also have to give us your written input. Don't forget that. Honourable Tablanche.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will certainly do that. I don't have a lot to say because I've been covered extensively by the Honourable Whitfield and yourself, and I agree with the stuff that was said. Chairperson, just two things. I just want to request that we get, you know, updated reports on this, you know, the things that was raised. I found the presentation by Hayley very, very informative and very good. Chairperson, the last thing that I want to know, you know, the critical infrastructure, we hear now that people have been appointed and we didn't receive anything on that, and who was appointed, blah, blah, blah. Can we just maybe get an update on that as well? Thank you.
I've asked for that update, Honourable Tablanche, as you heard, and I'll insist that we receive that still this week. Honourable Deputy Minister, could you please ensure that we receive the names of those who were appointed? Honourable Shembeni, and then Honourable Siyabe, our whip.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm covered with this one of the critical infrastructure. I also had a question that we've done the interviews, but now we don't hear what is happening. I want to go back to this one, Section 13.7c. I'm a bit confused there, because here they say upon receipt of written authorization, refers to in paragraph A, any member may condone of the area or part thereof, and may, where it is reasonably necessary in order to achieve the object specified in the written authorization. Now, without a warrant is being cancelled, and within the condoned of area, search any person premises or vehicle. Right, and then I see here we've been covered by Section 21 and 22 of the Criminal Procedure Act. Sorry on that one. Then, now I want to know about this authorization, the copy of the written authorization. Which one? Because as far as I know here, we were talking about a warrant. Now there is no warrant, we're talking about an authorization. We must have a clear mind as to what is happening here in order to protect our police officers who are working outside here. Are they not going to conduct the stops and search and all these things? Because all these things, the people, the community, they are the first people to get these things. And say you stop them, you suspect, and they say, no, you don't have an authorization to search me. What do you want? And all that. Can we get a clarity there? I don't exactly understand what is happening there. I see, yes, Section 21 and 22. But now, on that condoned area, I know a condoned area is something like a crime scene and all these places where maybe you have like a hostel where you will condone off
But what about the stop and searches along the road and these other things? How are our police officers protected here? Which written authorization other than the warrants that may give them the powers to search at any given time? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shembeni. Our Honorable Wood.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks very much for listening to me. In the main chair, I'm covered by the way forward, as you expressed it, on the how we are going to process the bills as presented. And I also agree with you on the one that we need to be referred back. But I was going to suggest, Chair, that with regard to the bill that was assented to not long by the President, I saw the presentation by the director, but I don't think it goes long enough. Maybe we need to have a meeting, a special meeting, so that they take us through, so that if there are things that need to be done by the portfolio committee, we're able to do those things, to start processing those things without delay. But further, that in that presentation, the the secretariat will give us progress report with regard to what they are supposed to do as a way of implementing the act now, because it's an act. And even with the three bills, as you referred to, that are very important, we need to have a way of making sure that we're able to follow up, to make sure that within, as they promise that the bill will come to Parliament, one bill is supposed to come to Parliament early next year, we're able to track the progress. So we need to have a schedule. So I was going to propose that all those, if we were to have a meeting, to interrogate all those, so that by the time we rise, we're able to say, yes, we are confident that things will happen as expected. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Whoop. And thank you very much for the direction you've given us. And I certainly appreciate the advice you've given us. You've been here for a very short space of time, but already we can feel your presence and you've made your presence felt. And I do take your advice very seriously. Honorable Whip, you can see that I really am condensing and squeezing the program before we rise, and that's why I brought this to the committee today. I would want us to be very clear on what we still need today before we rise, and what we want to do as a priority when we reconvene as Parliament. Honorable Whip, I'll be discussing that with you, but I'd also like the members, please members, whatever you send to me, I take very seriously. So send me your inputs on all these amendment bills, but send me secondly in writing, and there's a time limit to this, what you'd like me to prioritize on our agenda outside of what I bring to you. If there are any matters that you feel I have not covered sufficiently, I would sincerely like you to send that to me, and I'll place it on the agenda for when we reconvene as this committee. So before we rise, Honorable Whip, let us, the two of us, we have to approve the program. Our time is very limited and very short. I use this day today to bring this, but obviously we do need a longer period of time. If you want that to happen before we rise, we'll discuss it when we see each other later today. Deputy Minister, we don't want too many detailed responses, because these matters will come back to the committee and they'll give us their written inputs. the honourable members. Honourable Deputy Minister, I'm going to take your responses.
Thanks, Chair. We take note of the observation that members have made, and that we will communicate timely on the request that you have made. But thanks very much. I'll allow the secretary to comment on other things if there's any matter that needs our response at immediately. Thank you.
DM, don't forget, I'll send a letter requesting that you have the Critical Infrastructure Council send the name sent to me urgently so that I can forward it to the members. Please don't forget, DM.
Yeah, that's why I said any matter that needs response will appropriately respond on them. Yeah.
Thanks, comrades. Sorry, Honorable Deputy Minister. You can continue. Could we have, firstly, could we have Mr. Rapia and then Mr. Chauke and then Ms. Halley Stocky? Mr. Rapia?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think the constitutional judgment in the sub-amendment B, we've already made that amendment. But if there's a process that the portfolio committee would like to follow to fast track that, we will be amenable to that. But that matter has already been put in the draft bill. The presentation, I think, on the SIRA Amendment Act, yes, we will make ourselves available and we can have a joint presentation with SIRA as requested by the portfolio committee. With regard to appointment of members, because the process, our understanding is that the minister need to, after the recommend the list that he was given, he has to now respond and table the final appointment that he has made. So I'm just indicating because he's away, it might not be possible this week, but as soon as he's back, because those administration issues we are busy processing, he will definitely submit the tabling of the fully constituted council. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rapia. Honorable members, you have 2 weeks to submit to me your inputs. I'm very strict about the 2 weeks. I'm really closing the year now, and I'm not going to close the year without your inputs. I'll be calling you if you don't give me your inputs. Mr. Chauke, thank you, Mr. Rapia.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I haven't got much to say on the amendment bill. I think I'm looking forward, together with the team, to work with the Civilian Secretariat to ensure that we bring the bill as close as possible to implementation. There's still a lot of work to be done before that, and to assist Parliament as well to consider those regulations that we will be supporting the bill. Thank you, the amendment. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Halley Stocky.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think I only noted two questions, one from Honourable Whitfield and one from Honourable Shimbeni. And I think Mr. Rapia answered in part Honourable Whitfield's question about whether if the SAPS Act or the SAPS Amendment Bill came before the committee, could it include the portion of the amendment to Section 137C? And Mr. Rapia had confirmed that it is already included. With regards to Anvil Shimbeni's question, this is why I stated that if the committee wanted to introduce a committee bill, it should approach the department to see if the amendment as suggested by the Constitutional Court is workable, is implementable. And with regards to his question relating to what written authorization, that would be the written authorization mentioned in 13.7a, which is the written authorization by the national or provincial commissioner, police commissioner. And then with regards to his other question about what about stop searches, I don't think the SAPS would then invoke section 13.7. It would rather invoke section 21 and 22 of the Criminal Procedures Act, which allows for searches, warrant or warrantless. I hope I've answered all the questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ali Starkey. I appreciate your presence here today, and we'll certainly write to the Parliamentary Legal Services to thank them for allowing you to be in the committee today and commend you for the work you have done. Honourable members, this we are really pushing our staff. So before I end the meeting, I would really like to thank Vuyo from the Minister's Office, Nolundi from the Deputy Minister's Office. Please, it's not an order of priority, it's just as, and not because you are more important in my head. Nicolette van Selgos, you are doing tremendous work. I know I'm putting you under so much pressure. Dudu Lenzi, DM's office, Dr. Kinnis, I'm putting you under tremendous pressure. Babawa, despite writing exams, you were able to respond to all the work I expected. Nobesutu, we've been on break, we've been doing election work, but we've continued doing the work of the committee. Please convey my gratitude to Dr. Tuli. I'll thank you all personally before we go on recess. But committee, you would not understand the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes before we bring all these presentations and the work to you. The DM's office, Nolundi, DM, your staff has been absolutely brilliant. Asisipo, our researcher, your staff, the minister staff, I don't know if Vuyo, I see says Vuyo Glaku is also here. I call her in the middle of the night if I can't get hold of the minister. We put pressure on her to send the presentations. If they're not there, oh, we call her hundreds of times. So says Vuyo, please tell the minister that I'm expecting the annual crime stats before we do rise as a committee. Honorable committee members, Deputy Minister, Mr. Chauke, you will let us know, Deputy Minister, what is going to happen if we're going to have a party for Mr. Rapia before the COVID restrictions kick in. Deputy Minister, we want you to invite us to a farewell party for Mr. Rapia. Not during lockdown and the curfew, please, DM. It's been asked officially. Or else you will have to, when we meet as the committee, you will have to invite Mr. Rapia so that we can thank him in person. Honorable members, I've asked that early next year, we do have a stress plan, and that if the COVID regulations allow us, that we do meet physically as a committee and we strategize and plan. It's the midterm, we have to do our midterm review and plan for the last part of our term of office. Honorable members, if you have nothing else to say or if there's no urgent other matters, I'll give you 1 second to tell me that you still have something to say before I close the meeting. Honourable members, do you have anything urgent to bring to my attention?
Yes, Chair.
Honourable
thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm just being concerned. Yeah, it's unfortunate that the National Commissioner and the Minister is not here, but the Deputy Minister is here. The crime rate in South Africa, the attack on police stations. We have a recent attack in Malamulele whereby firearms, R5s and pistols, ammunition have been taken, and I'm fearing that we are under attack, because I raised this last week that we had robberies around Ngoma's in Mpumalanga, whereby you find that those armed robberies are more than 20 or 30, and the cars are being shot at. I don't talk about the police, but now if these people can be able to rob the police station, where are we standing? The safety of our communities. What is the SAPS going to do with these things? Because it's going to escalate. I remember we were warned about this after the July unrest, that they were going to attack police stations and attack police officers and their families. They want the guns. Now they've started attacking the police stations. Already, they cannot find us in white condition. No, it cannot. So something must be done. I thought that I must raise this with the committee. And the other one, Chair, this is for the committee also. The continuous arrest of this advocate, Tefu, who is representing officers in the SAPS. It's really, really, really a matter of concern. And how can you arrest a person or say a person has trespassed in a public area like a police station, a provincial office, court, and all these places? How can you say a person is trespassing there? I want us to look on that one, because I think we're going to experience a big problem on that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shembeni. Honorable Shembeni, do you understand why I have now taken a decision that the annual crime statistics will be brought to us before we go on recess? So I think, Dr. Kinnis, did I set that for the 8th of December?
Yes, Chair. We were originally scheduled to review the provincial crime stats and gender-based violence. So we have to do the annual crime stats. So the annual crime stats will take the place of the provincial crime stats. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, I think you would agree with me, as Honourable Shembeni said, that the presentation we did last week on the crime stats last week Friday, the presentation that we received was good, but we have not had an opportunity to analyze those stats and to really interrogate the crime statistics. So I've taken a decision that we will interrogate those crime statistics on the 8th of December. The presentation will reach you ahead of time. And the researcher will be able to do an analysis of those crime statistics. We cannot leave it as it is. Those statistics are quite shocking and horrendous, and this committee has to deal with it in more detail. Any other member that would like to make some? Oh, Honorable Shembeni, the matter of Advocate Tifo is a top priority, and we are engaging SAPS on that matter. Could I get the deputy and other members, would you like to comment, Honorable Whoop, before I close?
No, I'm fine, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Whoop. If I do not see any further hands, DM, before I close?
No, we note the concerns that members are raising, and these are issues that As police, we regard them as a priority. We have always said on many occasions that attack on police officers or the institutions of government should be treated as a treasonous act, because we take a dim view around act of this nature. So yes, we are concerned about that, and we are working on ensuring that we put necessary infrastructure in our stations to ensure that the issue of security is attended to. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, honourable members. We have our homework to do. This is work in progress, but we are running out of time. So we are galloping, and we have increased that gallop. It's no longer a marathon run. We're a marathon, and as only has 2 years left, so it's no longer a marathon. We are now sprinting, and the 100-meter sprint has to be evaluated. Our oversight work has been intensified. We have to have a strict control over gender-based violence and other forms of crime. So before this committee does go on recess, we are going to have that crime statistics. We are going to evaluate our work according to the crime statistics. The work of the committee, we have two priorities. One, to reduce crime. Two, to ensure that all our acts and legislation serves the people of our country, the flag of our country, and the constitution of our country. We do this without fear, favor, or any form of prejudice. We are not going to be having any political preferences. We are here to oversee the law. And as you can see, honorable members, we listen to all political parties. We are working as a unit. And I would like to thank the committee members for the cooperation, the comments, even though we differ, the comments we have made. Honorable members, we have lost two of our very good contributors in this committee, again, even though we differed, through death. We lost Honorable Jackie Mofokeng. It was a sad loss to the committee. She went to another committee, but again, her death was not a good one for us. We lost Honorable Mapatsi. Again, a sad loss for the committee, someone who contributed. We do not always agree with one another, but we respect the views of all our members. Today, we have good news and sad news. Good news that we have not lost Honorable Faku to any calamity, illness or whatever. She has been promoted. It's a young woman. We say Malibongwe. We are there to support her. As a committee, we'll also Faku, once more a member who's played an integral role in ensuring that the work of this committee is done. Deputy Minister, thank you to the Minister. Even though he's not here today, we'll follow up with the Minister's Office and the National Commissioner's Office. Honorable Shembeni, the National Commissioner, will be back. And when we do the annual crime statistics, we'll interrogate the work that has been done. From the Parliamentary Legal Services, you have given us support, very high level of support, very professional. Ms. Ali, can you convey our appreciation to the Parliamentary Legal Services? Honorable members, we'll be participating in the House today. Good luck for that. Those who will be physically in the House, we'll see you in the House. The rest of the members who will be participating virtually, we hope to be seeing one another physically soon. I now declare the meeting adjourned. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much.